Avenatto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
No way. No way. It's another Brock and Salk podcast. Hi, buddy.
No way. We have so much to talk about.
Too much. It's too much. Once a week might not be enough for us during football season.
I didn't even text either of you and tell you guys about the dream that I had.
Candy corns?
Whoa.
No. No. I mixed a melatonin and peanut butter M&Ms, and I had a dream where I attacked Jim Mora. Maybe we can get to that at the end.
That might need its own podcast, I would say.
Well, let's get to, let's wait till the very end, because my body was hurting
People have to hold on for that.
Yeah, my body hurting so bad. So I took a melatonin, and Haley had some friends over, and they had big bag of peanut M&Ms, and I popped a few of those before bedtime thinking, ooh, I may get a good mix, good little dream here. And sure enough, I went on attack mode.
Okay.
Like back at, like that Jim Mora right there. It was rewound all the way back to him attacking me and I attacked him. So I'll tell you maybe about
that
later.
But you didn't attack him.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Huard has to say.
So I don't want to, we'll save this to the end because I already have some, you know, amateur armchair psychology for you on this one. This is pretty easy. So good. All right, I'm excited. We'll do that near the end. Lots of stories. Why don't I start off with an insult today? Why don't we start off with an insult? How does that
the Washington Coast?
Nothing to insult on the Washington Coast. I'll tell you all about my great experience south of Westport. Man, Grayland Beach, let's go. I'll tell you all about that. Nothing to insult there. No, I'm going to start off by insulting the 12s.
Oh, this is going to be great.
Right off the bat. And not just your average, ordinary 12.
Oh, boy.
The smart 12s.
Oh.
Ooh.
Hey, smart 12s. Out there, you know who you are. You post on Twitter. You're looking at DVOA or something else like that. You're smart. You don't just watch football on Sundays. You really care about it. Right? How the Seahawks do every week is super important to you. It matters. And because of it, you're passionate. And by the way, I love that about you. Like, I think it's great. I think we need more of that. We need more passion here in the great Northwest.
Who are you closing your eyes and speaking to right now, by the way?
I'm closing my eyes. My eyes are wide open, finally, for the first time. This is the first time my eyes have been opened to the problems with smart 12s. Let me just give you a little message, smart 12s. You are going to be responsible for the breakup of the Seahawks.
Whoa.
I just want you to know now that when everything falls apart, it's going to be because of you.
Mm.
Because you were so smart. You were. You couldn't help it. You looked at all the numbers, and you saw what else was going on in the league, and then you looked at Russell, and you know how talented he is, and you just wondered, well, what if Russell Wilson had one of these other offensive systems, and what if Russell Wilson was throwing for 1,000 more yards every year? Because you, just like everybody else, even though you're smart, guess what you got caught up with? Yards. You didn't mean to. You thought you were being like smarter and fancier and getting above and beyond yards because that sounds basic. But it turns out you're basic. You blew it. You got sucked in to the big offensive output yardage game that everybody else gets caught up in. And guess what you did? You created a little slogan. Let Russ cook, you said.
Oh, boy.
Right?
Oh, boy.
Let Russ
boy.
Cook. Makes perfect sense. Here's the problem. Guess who heard it? Not Pete Carroll. No, not the coaching staff of the Seattle Seahawks. Not John Schneider or anybody
Jody Allen
in management. Maybe. I don't know. I've never heard from Jody Allen, so I can't tell you whether she heard it, maybe behind the scenes. But nobody who was making football decisions for the Seahawks heard your pleas. Instead, they went about doing their thing the way they always do, looking for balance, looking to improve their defense, although not necessarily in the pass rush department. But, you know, on the back end, and linebackers and everything else. Offensive linemen.
For days.
Brandon Schell, dude, is gigantic, by the way. He's huge. So, they didn't listen to you at all. But guess who did?
Oh, boy.
Russell. Russell seems to have heard your cries. Russell seems to understand what you want to let him cook. And now, he's even talking that way.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, I think the reality is that, you know, early in the games, you know, I want, you know, definitely, you know, rather than us having it be in the fourth quarter, I think to be able to, you know, make some stuff happen. I think we want to, I think we have a crazy stat of the lead of, you know, I think 56-0 when we have the lead, you know, by halftime and stuff like that. I think, you know, getting ahead is a key thing.
Uh-oh.
Ooh.
Now Russell's heard you.
Uh-oh.
He's heard your stats. He's heard the numbers. He's read your tweets. Maybe he's got like a little search function up on his tweet deck for Let Russ Cook, hashtag Let Russ Cook. And he just sees all the tweets that come in all day saying Let Russ Cook. I mean, he's got no time to sleep. So what do you think he's doing at night? Most of his businesses can't be doing anything right now. There's no economy. So Russ is just sitting there on tweet deck with his little search bar out there looking up Let Russ Cook all day long. And now he's starting to talk that way. Now, I don't know where this will lead, Brock. Maybe this will lead to nothing, and it'll just blow over once they start winning the Pete Carroll way like they always have and always will. Maybe it will lead to some level of change, and maybe Pete and Shoddy have heard some of these cries, and we don't know it yet, but once the season starts, there will be a little more of an emphasis on letting Russ cook earlier in games. That's certainly a possibility. The last possibility, however, is that this is the beginning of the end for Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson. Now, I don't think that that's going to be the case. Let me be very clear about that. I don't think that's going to happen.
So you're just an insult without believing it's
going to happen. I don't think that's happen. But if it does, I want to be very clear who's at fault. Smart 12s will be at fault. Smart 12s.
Couldn't you just hear it in Russell's voice? He right now, he's not there yet. He's not to the point where he's going to go all in, where he's decisive, Russ. He's, you know, Russ. You know.
Well, you know, there's a stat out there.
Yeah, I mean, don't hold me to this, all right?
Yeah, you know, there's
don't
the
make
stat.
Me accountable for this point of view.
No, it's the smart 12s who are accountable. He's just kind of parroting what he's hearing. I don't know, man. You think this ends up leading to a problem?
I would say this is where, if we were doing our show every day, this is where the texts start coming in saying, you guys are trying to make something out of nothing.
That, by the way, that's the best thing about not doing the show every day. We don't have to hear that until weeks
here
later.
Here you go again. You're just trying to create drama. You guys are the drama queens. All you do is try to create drama and try to create something out of nothing. And I can just imagine that text toy right now, as you were picturing the smart 12s that you were speaking to, I am imagining, because I'm in an imaginative world my fight with Jim Mora last night.
Yes.
I'm imagining the text toy right in front of my face right now, just hammering back with, you know, this is fake. You guys are making stuff up.
Well, I am
Why
making
do you
it
always
up right
love-
now. They're right. There's nothing, there's no there there yet.
No, that's not
clear.
True. Hold
well,
on a second.
There's no fully there yet. Nobody's fighting. Nobody's arguing. But...
True,
Pete,
but
Russell's speaking publicly.
Yes, in 9 years, has Russell ever said that?
No.
In 9 years, has he ever broached that subject? Has he ever, even if he was kind of navigating and scrambling around it and not being totally decisive and going for it, I don't think I'd ever heard him say, I think, in fact, all I've ever heard him say was what he named his latest child. I mean, that's all that I've ever heard him talking about is win. I want to win. And we win, and I'm the winningest quarterback in the history of this league through eight seasons.
Well, and
so,
to be fair, that may be all this is about, and he even says it in the clip there. He doesn't reference himself. He doesn't say, I play better when I throw the ball earlier in the games. He said that we win, 56-0 when we're up at halftime. So to be fair, let's be clear, Russell seems to be saying that that is a different or perhaps better path to winning football games, and he's not making any sort of... You know, there's no MVP. He's not saying, hey, I want to win an MVP, and this is the way to do it. I want to be very clear there. He's not doing that.
No, he's not. But do you want my, like, honest opinion?
Yes.
While Russell thinks he's going to play till 50 like Ichiro, he's not. And I think coming into year 9, he is at least at the halfway point. I think a 15 to 16-year career for him and play another 8 years till his late 30s, maybe even get to 40. We'll see. I think is a pretty fair projection. And I think at this stage, I do think you start to, especially as much change as you've had around you and all the different faces. And I mean, it's the life of Drew and Peyton and Tom. And this is the way it goes. There's going to be lots of new players. You're going to be the one standing pat, and you're going to have all sorts of new faces around you. You do start to think about yourself. I think you start to think about your legacy. I think you start to think about where your standing is in this league. And, you know, it was one thing when you were the young pup and you were looking up at Tom and Peyton and Drew and Ben and all those guys, which he did. And then all of a sudden you start to ascend and you climb over and they retire and they move on and you pass them. And now, according to your peers, you're the number two player in this league. And you want what comes with that. You want the MVPs, because the MVPs and winning Super Bowls is how you cement yourself as the greatest of all time. Like, we can go back and play the tape from his first few years where many mocked him and laughed at him when he said he plays this game because he wants to be the greatest to ever play it. Like, that is, and I don't think that's changed in 8 years. But what has changed is now going into year number nine. Okay, how do I cement myself and my reputation and my legacy right there with Tom and Peyton and Drew and all the rest of them? You do it by winning a Super Bowl, and you do it by winning MVPs. And he's never once had an MVP vote. And I think he's looking at, in his mind, what is going to be the best way to beat the 49ers and the Rams and the Cardinals and win this division, and to win this division, to win the NFC, and to win a Super Bowl. We got to do more offensively. And I think him being willing to say that is something new, where we never heard that in training camp.
So
ever,
Pete,
ever,
so
ever,
how does
ever,
Pete
ever,
react?
Ever.
Because that to me is the sexiness of this story is okay, fine. If that's what Russ wants, I can understand that. I mean, everything you just said makes sense. There's no what fault here with the players, the coach. Like, they're just doing their thing, and I don't have any issue with that. But how does Pete react to that?
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to bring up next. How did John and Pete and Dave Pearson and the rest of the crew, after he has that media Zoom session, right? And you probably have more opportunity to kind of pull him aside and chat with him. Do you think they dig in further? Like, okay, what's going on here? What are we doing here? Because this
hope,
is a lot of the noise on the
that
outside.
They know what's going on, that this is an active and ongoing conversation, and that they're not now just talking through the media. That would be terrible. I hope that's not the case.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think he's just talking through the media. I think he's looking at the entire situation there and seeing what they're doing and the pieces that they've added and not added, and said, okay, how are we going to go about this? I mean, are we going to stylistically play this way? And, you know, this is where I'm a little torn, Salk, because it kind of takes two to tango, right? I mean, Russ has lots of autonomy. He has lots of playmaking. He's got plenty of opportunity. And we've always said, man, his governor, his risk governor and risk management with the ball is as good as anybody in the game. And that's a big reason why their record is what there is. And Russell's won as many games as he's won, that he's not going to pull the trigger in the first quarter or the second quarter and take, I think, some of the risk that he's going to take in the fourth quarter.
Well, so why would they stop doing that? By the way, this whole thing continues to boggle my mind and make me mad. Like, the whole let Russ cook thing, like, when I start thinking about it, which thankfully I don't have to do that often, but when I do, it does irk me, because it's not like we haven't seen it. We've seen what happens when they try to open it up early. Do you remember the last year of Daryl Bevel? You remember how many times Daryl Bevel just starts winging the ball all over the place with no success at all? Like, oh, Russell, and he's sacked. Like, we've seen what happens when they try to do that early in the game before softening up the defense a little bit. Doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe it'll work better now. Maybe Schottenheimer's better at it than him.
The trouble is that you've had this one glaring hole on your team the entire time Russell Wilson's been here.
The offensive line.
And it's the offensive line. And the theory being, if you truly had a just average, normal offensive line,
but
if you were trotting out
letting,
Jermaine Effetti every single time.
Don't say that's letting Russ cook. That's different. Build an offensive line. By all means, make that your call. Build the offensive line. Make offensive lines great again. Go ahead. Just take whatever line you want and make it all about the offensive line and say that's your real focus. Because then you could do whatever you wanted with it. Then Russell could cook. Russell could hand it off. Russell could be a sous chef. Whatever you want Russ to do is all possible behind a great offensive line. Make that your focus. But when your focus is let Russ cook, what you're saying is just let Russ throw. And letting Russ throw early and often has not led to the kind of success that you want it to, nor do I think it will. So, all right, give Russell the greatest offensive line of all time. Okay. By the way, they tried. First-round picks, second-round picks, trading second-round picks, right? They're spending money. It's not like they've ignored the problem. Now, they may have failed to fix it.
Over and over and over and over.
But there's a difference, right? I mean, you know, one is, hey, there's a leak in that faucet over there. Yeah, don't worry about it. It'll be fine. The other is, there's a leak in the faucet. Yeah, I know. I called the plumber. Well, what happened? Well, he came over, said that, yeah, I don't know, and then he left. Well, okay, did you call him again? Yeah, then I called the plumber again. Then what happened? Well, he came over, but he said he had the wrong tool. Okay, well, did he go back and get the right? Yeah. And the next thing you know, it's 5 years later and your sink's still not fixed. But it's not for lack of trying. Every day you call the plumber. The Seahawks have called a million plumbers. Unfortunately, they were Luke Jokel. Unfortunately, they were Jermaine Effetti.
They found every one of them on Craigslist instead of actually, you know, going to Angie's List and trying to get a real one.
That's not true. They spent legit money and resources on it. They just chose the wrong people. What can you do?
Couple things.
They got duped
couple
by
things.
Bad reviews.
Hold on a second. Couple things. Number one, the smart people, they texted me.
Okay,
they somehow got to me here, even though there is no text toy. They still texted and said, enough with your stupid yards. That's never been the conversation. The conversation's about efficiency and what is the best way statistically to be efficient in today's NFL, to give you the best chance to win with the new rules.
The answer is yards.
No, the answer is let your best player, who is protected more than ever before in this league, who you can't hit the way you used to hit even 10 years ago, and a passing system that calls, you know, more defensive pass holding and pass interference and everything else that gives you, you know, just the opportunity to take advantage of the efficiencies that other teams around you have taken. So I think that that's the conversation when it comes to offensive line. I think the real directive here has been Pete wants to have what? He wants to have balance. He wants guys that can still move people off the ball. And all of your years of all the different plumbers you brought in, the majority of them were, okay, if we've got to lean between a guy that can run block or pass block, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Or if we got to lean in the market and figure out in the market where there's an inefficiency or an opportunity, where are we going to lean? We're going to want guys that can put their hand in the ground and move people. And thus we're going to get Fluker, and thus we're going to get Upati, and thus we're going to get Ethan Posick, and thus we're going to lean on the side of those guys that can still, because the Duane Browns who can do both are unbelievably rare. And every line in the league would love to have five Duane Browns. Most of them have one that can do both. So then what do you want to lean? Do you want to lean with guys that can protect the passer more and become more finesse and more pass friendly and go about that route? Or do we want guys that can still get down and dirty and move people off the ball and want to play a physical brand of football? And that is typically where they've leaned. When they didn't, and they went Jimmy Graham.
As they should, Brock. Yes.
And when they went Jimmy Graham at tight end, who was a more finesse guy, and they thought, well, we can take a finesse guy and make him, we can make him Gronk. We can make him want to run block. No, you can't.
No,
you can't. And that kind of blew up in their face
back for a couple of years.
So does Russell want to add two or three guys that can pass protect better than they can run? They can run block, because I think that is a bit of the conundrum they found themselves in. On that offensive line side of things, as they built it. They made that decision that if they've got to go one way, we're going to go more physical than we are finesse.
And yes, I agree with that. And they did it in the it starts in the player acquisition phase, not just in the game calling phase. You want to spread it out, throw it all over the place with David Moore and Dorsett. I mean, why? You don't want to do that. What are you talking about? You've got two wide receivers.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. Two wide receivers and two tight ends. seven tight ends, but right. Two that you want.
Like you're not going to spread it out with this group. Now, do I wish they had found another wide receiver weapon in the draft? Yes. I want to be clear. I'm not saying that you don't need those things. You still need weaponry. You still need guys to win on the outside or on the inside or in the slot or ever. Like, guys have to be able to beat coverage. You still need good players on offense. Especially in the passing game. Passing game isn't unimportant. It's just not the only thing. And I'm surprised that the smart people out there want to zig while everyone else is zigging. Because history tells us that usually if you're not the first to zig or the best to zig, probably a better idea to zag.
Mm.
And you've got a perfect Zag quarterback in Russell Wilson and a perfect Zag coach in Pete Carroll. Embrace the Zag. Stop trying to divorce these two and embrace the Zag. You know, that's what the Seahawks are all about.
This goes back to embrace Morrison and Stepp and Santangelo and all of them.
It does.
You have always loved them.
Corey Violette, my guy. Embrace the Zag. That's
So where does this go with Russ?
Nowhere yet.
Where does this go with Russ?
This is on the watch list, Brock.
In game number one, if all of a sudden they fall behind and they just have 46 total yards at offense in the first half and the little grasshopper's texting you guys and you say, settle down, little grasshopper. You know, this is how they play. This is how it's going to go. And all of a sudden, you know
what? Are you the grasshopper in this?
What's that?
You're the grasshopper.
I'm the grasshopper.
Right? Freaking out in the middle of the first quarter.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, exactly. When they've had two first downs at half, or 27 total yards at halftime.
Now it's going to be worse. You're going to have all weekend to fret over this because you're not doing any games, right?
No, whoa. Watch it.
Do you have games?
We don't know yet.
But doesn't Fox only have the Big Ten and Pac-12?
And Big 12.
Oh, you have Big 12.
This isn't intramurals, brother.
Sorry.
Okay.
Are you sure?
Yes.
So you're going to be at like Kansas?
Yes.
Oh, God.
Yes.
Oh,
Texas and Oklahoma and Iowa State. This is a Big 12, brother. Oklahoma State. Okay. Where I think they had 28 sorority girls all get tested positive out of 28. So, yes, we'll see. We'll see whether we have games or not.
COVID or?
Whoa.
Okay.
With COVID.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, just checking.
Jeez.
Well, I don't know. Tested is a wide variety of things. It used to mean something different.
So the next time Russ has his little media call, do you think the rest of the media members paid attention, put this one in their pocket? We're like, oh, okay. So he's kind of going there. He's kind of going a direction. He's kind of zagging when he's always gone one other way. Salk is. Do you think this has any legs?
We'll see. Not yet. No, it does not have any legs.
Week three.
Yet.
They're 0-2.
But let's just can we just put this one in the bank and wait on it for a little bit? Don't start crowing and texting in week one or two if nothing has happened. This could be this is something where in a year or two we're pointing back to it and being like, man. I wonder if that was a bigger deal at the time than we made it out. Now, I don't know. Look, as I said, this could be nothing. Maybe this is just a, you know, a frustrating day or whatever. And I don't know how Pete's going to react. There's so much still to come. This is really early in the process. I can't stress that enough. But if it does go the wrong way and there's some sort of conscious uncoupling between Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll, just know that smart people on Twitter are going to be the reason
Well, let me just add, that's, I think, all well said. And I will just add my final little footnote to this. I think this is very clearly what you just said. This is a power play between Russ and Pete. This is not about Shoddy. It's not about John Schneider and player acquisition. That this is the two that have endured here for, you know, a good 9 years together. And as is usually the case, it's head coach and quarterback. But I don't think there is any question that this was Russ, you know, like, hey, Pete, you know, this is where I'm at. And this is what I feel. And you know, if we're going to bring this and have to start bringing this to the public forum, we're going to do that. And I think that this is a first little, you know, scramble, a little baby step, you know, kind of go there, you know. And I think that this was a first little play between the two, and it will be kind of fascinating to watch moving forward.
All right. Speaking of, I got three little questions, Brock, which I'm going to ask you. And they are all going to lead to one bigger question.
Whoa.
All right. So that's coming up here in a minute. Three little questions to all lead to one bigger question here about the Seahawks. I want to remind everybody first, every Friday in August, Ascend is partnering with their friends at Upchurch Vineyard. They have an exclusive Ascend at Home 3-course Taste of Summer dinner package available. Now, this is pretty good. This is where you do at-home date night. You've done that, right?
Yes.
When you're talking love languages. How many are there? 7?
Knock it off.
How many?
You know
languages?
The 5 of them.
5 love languages. Oh, yeah, you're right. I know them by all.
Gifts, physical touch, right. Your favorite, quality time.
Right.
You know all the rest of them.
Words of affirmation.
Words of affirmation, acts of service. There's the 5.
Which one am I? Which one do I need?
Physical touch.
That's true. Well, every Friday in August, a good way to get there. Ascend and Upchurch Vineyard, as I said, Ascend at Home 3-course Taste of Summer dinner package. They are perfectly paired with a bottle of Upchurch Vineyard wine included in the package. Great value. So you check out the menu. They're great. This week's main course is, I think, Braised Prime Short Rib. And then you can also look out on their Instagram page, on the Ascend Prime Instagram page. You see giveaways all month long. This week, they're giving away a Taste of Summer dinner for 2 and a wine tasting and charcuterie experience for 5 at the Upchurch Red Mountain Winery. Really good stuff. Okay, all the info is at ascendprime.com. You can check their menu items and promotions, location. You can go to Bellevue yourself. Check out Ascend in person. The views are ridiculous, especially on a beautiful day. You can just see forever. It's just awesome. So Ascend Prime, and every Friday in August with the big Taste of Summer home three-course dinner package. Again, go to ascendprime.com. All right, here we go.
Ready? What do you want? You want to hit some music or something?
No, I just want to make sure you're ready.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm ready to go. Is our arms straight up in the air just waiting while I'm typing?
While you were typing, I wasn't sure that you were ready.
You're good.
All right, three questions, Brock. Three training camp conversations where three little questions lead to a big one. By the way, you should know that today's show is being done a little bit differently. So I'm in studio, of course, with Howdy. And Howdy's brought his dog in today, Lady. Lady has joined us for the show today. First time ever Lady is coming. Now, you should know about Lady. She's a beautiful dog. She's very sweet. A little shy, yes. I would say, yes. And excessively gentle.
Yes.
I don't know that she's loving the argumentative like energy in the room a ton. She's kind of pacing. She keeps giving me the look of, like, I wish he'd be quieter. She would be much better off on like an NPR podcast.
Yeah, she's a big podcast person. That's right. Why I brought her here.
So I told you, I've been listening to more of these podcasts recently. So like, I've been listening to, everyone wanted me to listen to Winds of Change. Have you heard Winds of Change?
I've heard about
it. You know what it is? You know the idea behind it?
No.
It's a really good idea, especially if you're an 80s metal fan like I am. The Scorpion song, Wind of Change, Brock, you must know that, right?
Yes. Yes, I do, Howdy.
The whole show, the whole podcast is based on this rumor that that song was written by the CIA as part of a like psychological ops campaign against the Soviets.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it's a really good idea. And I listen to it. But the way they talk just, it blows my mind. I've never heard anyone talk the way the like official episodic podcast voice talks. Mm. And maybe you've heard it, Serial or some of these other podcasts. And I guess that's now the company we keep. So maybe we should be. I mean, it's bizarre. They have this strange way of drawing out every last syllable to every word, every line. So this guy will tell the story and be like, I want to tell you a story. A story about a man named Bob. Bob works at the CIA. The CIA, you may know, is an organization. An organization
that
attempts to bring down other governments. Now, it's very secret. So I talked to a guy. His name was Brutus. Now, Brutus was around in 1944. 1944 was in the middle of World War II. I've never heard anybody talk like this in my entire life. And it distracts me to the point where I can't listen to these damn things. It's constant.
Oh, it's so good.
Everything is set up this way. So you come in, you're like, play me some sound. Howdy, play me a sound of anything. Give me some Pete Carroll sound, whatever it is. Give me some Pete.
We'll go back to Russell Wilson.
Whatever it is. Okay.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, I think the reality is that, you know, early in the games, you know, I want, you know, definitely, you know, rather than us having it be in the fourth quarter, I think to be able to.
Now, that's a man named Russell Wilson. He was drafted in 2012 by John Schneider, the Seattle Seahawks. He came in immediately as a rookie and had a lot of success. In fact, he went to the Super Bowl in his second year in the league, didn't win it, and then lost the next year. Now, over time, Russell Wilson became a bigger and bigger deal in Seattle, Washington. Seattle's a small town, but it's big, it's growing, it's getting bigger by the day. In fact, over the last 10 years, Seattle has continued to grow at a rate no one's ever seen. This is the podcast for the it's the easiest thing in the world. I don't understand.
Do you have three questions that are going to lead to a big question?
Sorry, I am. All right, here we go. I'm distracted by the whole podcast thing. Let me ask you, Brock. Let me ask you some questions. I've got three of them. They'll all lead to a bigger one when I'm all said and done. I'm sorry. I'm doing it too fast because I can't speak at the like half speed level. You know why podcast players all have the 1.5 and 2 speed? So that you can speed them up to a normal normal rate of speed. Okay. Question one for you, Brock.
Yes.
Did Greg Williams have a point?
Yes.
He insulted Pete Carroll. He made it seem like Pete was too boring to use Jamal Adams in the right way, right? So setting aside the fact that Greg Williams, here, you want to play? You can play me the Greg Williams. Here you go.
You know, we're very multiple in how we do those things anyway. You know, we're not just a stand, you know, but Jamal may get bored there because they don't use their safety type things and all the different complexities of maybe this, not showing what they're doing as much as we do.
Now, that was a man named Greg. Greg Williams.
Stop it. I'm going to take my headphones off.
I don't blame you. It's annoying, right?
Yes.
All right.
Thank you.
Setting aside that Greg Williams is a creep who halfway through that conversation realized he had dug a hole for himself that he wasn't sure how to get out of.
Yep.
And setting aside the obvious desire to defend Pete Carroll because he's our guy, does Greg Williams have a point?
Yes.
No.
Yes, he does.
No, he doesn't.
No, he does.
No, he really doesn't.
And no, it's the same reason that Paul Allen, in when he was owner of this team, brought in outside people to challenge Pete and his philosophy. And he wanted it, you know, to continue to innovate and to push and to challenge. And I think at every turn, you know, Pete's system has been solid. It's been unbelievably fundamental. It's been sound. And you win a lot of games. And that takes care of everything else. But is it a system that's more simple that allows the dead corpse of Matt Schaub to throw for 495 yards against you? Yes.
Well, sure. When Tedrick Thompson and Lano Hill are playing safety, I think the easy answer is no. Greg Williams does not have much of a point, and he should look inward. Greg Williams had arguably the best safety in the league the last few years and used them what? To get sacks instead of picks? Nice work, Chief. Congratulations.
I think he played to Jamal's strengths. Year? No, I think Jamal Leg Day Adams likes to be around the line. He likes to wreak havoc. He's an unbelievable run game and against the run instinctively. He knows how to beat tight ends and running backs in pass protection, and I think they utilized him pretty well. Yeah. I mean, to the point, Mike, they utilized him so well that a team was willing to give up two first-rounders and a third-rounder.
They utilized him so well that they went exactly nowhere as a team. So, yeah, I don't know that I buy that. Yeah, okay. Greg Williams always been a good defensive coordinator, don't get me wrong. He's not bad. But for him to start throwing shade at Pete Carroll, I thought was rich. And the idea that Pete doesn't adapt and use players to the best of their skills is malarkey. If anything, that's what Pete's done very well. And specifically, Russell Wilson has been the best example of it in the way Pete went away from things he had done his entire career when he drafted Russell Wilson and changed around an offense in order to be willing to play around the strengths of what the guy who became
totally
his
agree.
Best player.
Totally
so this
agree
idea
that
Pete Carroll doesn't adapt to stop, I think that's a bunch of garbage. So that would be my answer. We can have slightly different answers there to question.
Wrong answer, Brock. You're 0 for 1.
No. I think it's very... I think
do
it's
this like
very,
the Laughlin group.
Hold on a second. I think it's very
Rockyard.
I think it is very rich coming from him when you've not had the level of success that Pete has as a Hall of Fame caliber coach for decades and decades. So I do think it's very rich. But you ask me, does he have a point?
Not really.
Yeah, I think he's got a point.
All right.
But it's rich.
Question two. And the first one's a good lead into the second. It's the Marquise Blair conversation. Because they're playing him as a nickel. I might love this. This might be my favorite thing that's happening throughout this training camp and into the offseason. Am I convinced that it's going to work? Nope. Am I concerned that it's going to be a disaster? Absolutely. He's not a corner. He's not small. He's not particularly fast. And he's not like a coverage guy. So, yeah, there's a bunch of things that you generally attribute to being a nickel corner that he's not particularly good at. He's a hard-hitting safety.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm able to pair that knowledge with this. I know Pete's not stupid. I know that if Pete thinks there's something to the idea of Blair at nickel, he must be planning to use that position somewhat differently than everyone has in the past, right? Maybe it's more physical. Yep. Maybe it's trying for a new way of attacking the problems created by all these modern passing offenses and doing this in a new way. Maybe it's using big nickel without admitting it. I don't know. But I love it in theory.
I would agree with all of that. Yes, I think it's one of the more fascinating storylines. And remember, this was a guy that you took in the draft in the secondary at that point is the second highest pick that you've ever taken anybody other than Earl Thomas, who was, the 13th pick in the draft and in his very first draft. You go all these other years and you take Marquise Blair in the second round. And by the way, a guy that could not really make his mark his rookie year. He could not engender enough trust to get on the field more. He could not beat out Tedrick Thompson, who, by the way, is not even on an NFL roster right now in the league. And now you're going to, as you said, you're going to put him in his Marquise set himself. He's never played nickel. Like, this is all new to him. Like, he's never been in this spot. He's never been asked to.
He said that in a total of one word. You ever do this? Nope. He didn't speak a lot, Marquise. That's not his game.
No.
He's more of a hitter than a talker. Let's be clear.
Yes. He lets his body talk.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. And the fascinating thing to me, Salky, is I was on with Danny and with Paul and Danny earlier this week talking about like the best nickel, the best nickel corner in my era that I ever saw, played against, studied was Rondé Barber. with the Buccaneers. Like, that guy was just, he was stout. He was strong. He'd stick his nose in. He could stop the run. He was instinctive. He was intuitive. He knew the game. He could study alignments and tendencies and routes and formations and body language. And he just always felt like he was in the right spot at the right time. And then had the quickness, the short area quickness that you have to have. You have to be like an elite running back to play that position. You have to have elite short area quickness and instinct. And then you've got to be like a quarterback to think through, okay, you know, what is the route combination? What's the rub route? What's the pick route? What are they going to do here? What's the down and distance? You know, there is a lot going on to make that position go. And can Marquise flip that switch just from a football acumen standpoint? And you don't have to be a verbose speaker to be a high level, you know, high football 101 intellect. That those don't always connect. Like Benji Olson, who I played with, not a talker, an unbelievable like football 101. Cam Chancellor, not the biggest talker, unbelievable football 101. So can Marquise quickly flip that switch in an offseason where they just finally put on pads, what, August 17th for the first time? And no on OTAs and anything else. It's going to be a fascinating storyline to watch. But yeah, I do think it speaks to Pete's innovative ways.
He's got to be doing something different, right? I mean, yes. There's no way he looks at Marquise Blair, a guy that seemed to have all the physical ability, but didn't necessarily have it, you know, ready, making sense to him between the years last year to get on the field more than he did. And who doesn't have all of the skills you just said to be a nickel corner, he can't look at him and think, this is my perfect nickel corner. That's just not possible. And rather than continuing to rail and go, I don't understand, he's not a nickel corner. Well, okay, so if you accept that Pete's not stupid, which I think we can all accept by now, hopefully, what's he doing? What does this look like? Why is he trying to change what a nickel does? Is there something
for the most part we have to figure out Marquise. He's the one that's going to get the opportunity to get in on the slot and do some stuff that puts him in a position to be really active and be part of the pressure packaging and some real aggressive part of the play.
So he's got to be using him differently, right?
Yeah, and some of this is you've also got your teeth kicked in by the Rams offense for like 3 years and their whole fly sweep and their
edge. Trying to do it differently.
Yes, and you know what? We've been unable to stop that element. And, you know, the jet sweep was a big part of what the 49ers did, obviously, and were super effective there. And as they've gotten more physical at their slot receiver, guess what you better be? You better be very physical with your nickel cornerback.
Now, and I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, and, you know, I think last year the thought was, well, let's play base. Let's be physical. Let's put Kendricks and KJ and let's be physical and put the most physicality out there. But then you also have to have, as he just said, you have to have twitch, man. You have to have speed and quickness and guys that can get downhill and finish and attack the quarterback. And by the way, with your weakest unit and maybe arguably the weakest personnel unit in all the NFC West, your defensive line, then you better compensate off the edges and at nickel and at will linebacker with a Jordan Brooks and a Marquise Blair and some of these guys that have some physical snap.
Well, I'm curious to see how this one goes because clearly this is not the norm. Clearly this is not, you know, your prototypical nickel corner, but it seems to be what they want to do. So why? How does that actually look in a game? Does Quandre Diggs end up covering more? I don't know. I'm curious to see what comes off of this in order to try to combat some of the offensive evolution that Pete sees around him, especially in his division. All right, the third question here is, can LJ Collier, Jordan Brooks, Bruce Irvin, Benson Mayo, Rasheem Green, etc., improve their front seven? Or can the improved back end of your defense make enough plays to improve the front seven, even if the pass rush still isn't there? Right.
Front seven? The Bruce Irvin and Bobby Wagner and Jordan Brooks and KJ and Marquise Blair and Jamal at times when he's going to be in that front. The front seven, I think, can be improved.
Can all of that help the fact that your front four does not look improved? There's no way for it to work together to help?
Oh, it absolutely can work together and help, yes. But can it completely offset? When you get to third down and eight and you rush four and you just don't make any impact, does it matter that your back seven guys are good and they're in the right spots? No. No, I think the elite passers and the elite offenses always win that matchup. Like if you know, your five can block those four, it doesn't matter on the back end with the other seven. I mean, you're going to make some more plays. You're going to have some more hits. You're going to hopefully have a tip ball. You're going to take the ball away that, you know, Jamal Adams earlier this week jumps up in the red zone and makes an unbelievable pick six off of Russell for 100 yards. And absolutely, there's going to be more playmaking, Mike. But man, I mean, paint me as old school that, you know, that very simple math equation, when four can't beat five, it gets very difficult no matter if you're an exotic Greg Williams defense or you're a little bit more basic Pete Carroll defense. That's a tough one.
So all of those three questions then essentially are adding up to the biggest question, which is, can this be a plus defense? It doesn't have to be a dominant defense. I don't think any of us expect that it is going to be this year. But can it be a plus defense, one that actually helps them win instead of being dragged to the finish line by the offense?
Yes.
Because if it does, if those three things combined, right, Pete and the way he's going to use Jamal Adams, the way he's using Marquise Blair, and then whatever the heck they're going to do with these guys to try to help the front set, the front four, or the front seven, depending how you look at it, if those things are enough to just make them on the positive side of the ledger to be helpful instead of hurtful, you're probably Super Bowl contender.
Just like talking top 10? Talking
top 5.
I don't know whether I'm putting a number on it. I'm just saying positive. Can they be positive? Can they be a good thing rather than a negative thing? And if they are, with Russell Wilson, I think you're probably right there in a Super Bowl contending conversation.
Yeah. I mean, that is absolutely the thought in their mind and in their building, both from an acquisition standpoint and from a scheme standpoint, is we have done enough to shore up this defense that Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs, those two, and Dunbar, who we've not even talked about here, right, who is a huge piece of this. I mean, he's got to be the difference maker that you believe and take the ball away is a guy that can actually legitimately play that spot and not just, you know, bend and bend and bend and bend and bend, but actually break the will of the opponent and take the ball away from them. So that is the thought process in their building, man. It is just, gosh, I would love to say absolutely, Mike. And I don't know why it is so ingrained in me. And I still feel this way. Like, just add Clowney. If you add Clowney to this, then I can definitively say, yes, this is a plus defense. But there's something wrong there.
Would you have felt that way? I'm sorry, quickly, if it had been Everson Griffin?
No, I don't think so. Uh-oh. Just too much unknown. Just too much uncertainty.
What if it's Matthews?
No.
No. So it's Clowney or bust for you.
Yeah, and it's Clowney because he can play the run. It's Clowney because he can take over a game. It's Clowney because of what we saw him do and the impact he can have. And he was arguably the best player on your team defensively last year as far as impact goes. So you give me Clowney, and I think I will definitively say to you, yes, this can be a plus group. Or you give me Clay Matthews and another defensive tackle, because that defensive tackle...
All right, so what if it's Clay Matthews and Snacks? Does that get it done for you? Are you a plus defense?
You have an opportunity, yes.
What if it's just Clowney? You still have enough problems on the inside. I mean, God, as much as I want Clowney, I mean, Jaron Reed and Puna Ford both had a little, you know, got a little nicked up during the week of practice. Either one of those guys goes away for any amount of time. What are you doing?
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas indeed.
They are banking hard on defensive line veteran cuts across the league.
And to be fair, that does usually happen.
Yes.
And those guys are usually out there. They're like relievers. Like, you can just kind of find them. And sometimes it works out. And it has for them very well. So that's
you know what I would really like to have? I'd like to make sure Snacks is not an entire entree right now. Like, we're all saying, like, oh, yeah, just bring Snacks in.
He's going to send Prime every week.
Right. You think you're worried he's gained the quarter?
Do you know what those guys can look like without an offseason and, like, legitimate training? They can be 380 pounds.
Right.
Yeah.
And so during the quarantine, God knows.
I think if you're going to make that move.
Yeah, you got to check it out.
You kind of like to see what you got.
All right, let's finish up, Brock, with takeaways and tidbits. We're still early in practice time. I mean, we're not quite ready for full takeaways and all that. So I think next week I think Jake will join us next week, and we'll kind of dig into what's going on at practice. But I know you've seen some, heard some. So why don't you hit me with some takeaways from the first few days here of training camp?
takeaways.
I would say Marquise Blair, who we just spent a ton of time talking about scheme-wise, is the Chris Carson of this redshirt freshman class. And what I mean by that is, remember when Chris Carson came back from his freshman year to his sophomore year, because he played and got hurt, he was a different human. He was 20 pounds heavier. He was just stacked with even more muscle. He just had a look in his eye like, yep, this is going to be different. And I realized what I needed to do, and I'm going to change my body, and I'm going to attack this league. And Marquise Blair, from what I've heard, is up 10 to 15 pounds and yet has not lost any of the quickness and just the twitch that made him a second-round pick. And by all accounts, he has taken some of the frustrations of his rookie year, some of the lack of playing time, some of the lack of exposure, and said, okay, that's not going to be the same way. And maybe that has forced Pete Tand a little bit back to our conversation, you know, last segment of finding a role for him, because this guy is a bit possessed.
But 10 to 15 pounds of muscle is not exactly what you think of when you think nickel corner. Like, that's the guy who came in possessed to be your starting strong safety.
Yes.
And then they traded for Jamal Adams.
Yes.
Correct.
So I'm curious kind of how that plays out. I he'll get on the field. And whether Adams and Diggs and everybody else can stay healthy all the time, we'll see. And does Ugo Amadi push? Who knows? But I'm pumped for Marquise Blair. I thought he looked great when he was in there last year. I still don't understand why he wasn't in there more. So I'm looking forward to seeing a bunch of him this season.
Takeaways.
I would say, secondly, if there's one aspect that I would be missing the most, and am missing the most, of not being out at that practice facility, it is, you know the drill, it's the O-line, D-line drill. And they put pads on earlier in the week for the first time, and that is what I wanted to watch. And texting a few people that were there and kind of gaining their insights and watching. By the way, Tommy Champion, are you familiar with Tommy Champion, Salk? Tommy Champion is the undrafted rookie free agent from Mississippi State who got into it with Clint Hurt, the D-line coach.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, because Tommy Champion was like, I believe it was Benson Mayoa that he locked down on a couple reps.
Oh, he's an offensive guy. Okay, so he's not like playing for Clint Hurt.
No, it's okay. An offensive line.
I imagine he was some sort of a defensive line.
Oh, no. He was
offensive. Forget you, coach.
He was offensive tackle that just kind of got into a couple of Clint's guys and was barking and pushing and shoving and just didn't mind mixing it up. And I was like, ooh, A, I like the last name. B, I like the size. Undrafted dude out of Mississippi State and just a physical guy. And I think the O-line is going to have much more of their way in the O-line, D-line drill than they've had in a decade. We've gone from bad wet towel and, oh gosh, who was the other guy they flipped over from?
Webb.
Ugh, I mean, we can go through the whole list
Sokoli,
of guys.
Christian Sokoli?
No, who was the one that didn't even want to play left tackle? They tried to flip over from right tackle to left tackle. He ended up playing, I think, for the Niners.
Oh,
for
I remember that guy. I don't remember his name.
Yeah, he didn't really like that drill too much because Bennett and Averill and the rest of them had their lunch about every day.
We thought we were going to have Dan Orlovsky on today, so I was looking up the game that Cam Chancellor came back against Detroit and forced the fumble at the end of the game. Do you remember the game? What I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, Calvin Johnson,
yeah. Yeah. Do you know who started at center for the Seahawks that game? Played every snap in that game.
Lemuel Jean-Pierre?
Nope. I'll give you the $4 that are in my wallet right now, because for some reason somebody gave me actual money the other day. I'll give you the $4 in my wallet if you can come up with his name.
Who started at center? Wow. No idea.
I'll give you his first name, and I'll see if you can come up with his last. Brocky, you'll get it probably on the first name. Howdy, I don't know, maybe. His first name is Drew.
Oh, yeah, from Idaho. Yeah.
Do you know Brock?
No.
I'm giving you his first name. Guy played every snap of that game.
Yeah, he was cut in like week four.
That was week four.
Like week five.
He didn't play well.
Drew Ballos?
Nowak.
Oh, Drew Nowak. Yeah.
You remember the name Drew Nowak?
Who?
Yeah, exactly. That guy played every snap of that game.
Wow.
I know. Drew Nowak. So yeah,
how did he play? Were you watching intently?
I didn't watch the film. I just looked it up.
He's from a Western Michigan University.
Yeah, you almost had it.
Yeah. Steve Vallos is the one.
Oh, Steve Vallos is great with the sausage fingers. That's quite a bit earlier. No, this is 2015. Come on. This is only 5 years ago. Drew Nowak started a game, played the whole game.
Here's what I'm going to be very curious about in the next week or so when we get together next week. How much effusive praise have we heard from Coach Carroll about the defensive linemen? He gave a little shout out to LJ Collier, said he looks like a different guy and everything else. He didn't in the pass rush drill. He got owned on both of his reps, but that's fine. That's his first day of O-line, D-line. I'm going to be watching and listening and following more than anything, like this week. How much effusive praise do we get for Rasheem Green, for LJ Collier, for Brandon Jackson? Because I think that will be a little bit of a tell of...
Speaking it into existence, trying to make it happen by telling us that it's going to happen?
Yes.
This is great. He's great. He's going to be great because I'm saying he's great right now. Yeah.
Takeaways.
DK Metcalf, and all you got to do is listen to Tom, Jake, and Stacy, noon to 3, and you'll hear this, I think, every day. But DK Metcalf is just taking somehow another step up the ladder in the grown man scale and just being a professional. Did not rest in any way on his rookie breakout season. And, man, his commitment to his body and to his game and to his development is very real. Salky said last week, you're still going to be guarded, that the injury history and everything else. And I totally understand that. But just as far as taking your rookie season and the opposite of a sophomore slump is saying, okay, I know that that was nice. I know that I got better over the course of the year. I know that I became a go-to guy. I know that I was enormous in the playoffs and everything else. And I started to make an impression in this league. But year number two is where I cement that impression. And I become a true, legit Pro Bowler. And I start to even further the conversation of being one of the lead dogs in this league. As far as first early impression and takeaway, DK Metcalf did everything imaginable the last 5 months to hit the ground running.
Good. It's so remarkable. I mean, wide receivers really shouldn't be hitting their stride until years two or three, right? I mean, for him to have done what he did as a rookie, I think is special. Now, maybe that's changing a little bit in the last couple of years, right, since we were having these conversations about Golden Tate. Like, oh, you know, give him a few years. And to be fair, it did. It took him a few years, and then he got it, and he's been a great player
ever
since.
And it hasn't been a Seahawks problem, because it's been across the league that rookie wide receivers don't typically have great years.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I just mean that was like a thing, that rookie wide receivers takes a little bit at that position. But I wonder if because of the spread and all of the ways in which college football is based around the wide receiver, if that process has been sped up a little bit in the last few years.
Yeah, I think so. I think still learning the nuances to coverage and learning route trees and understanding schemes and systems while you're in the spread and you're understanding space, I think there is some development there. But, you know, and down in San Francisco, they're saying their guy that they took out of ASU, Ayuk, is way ahead of the curve as well. The guy that they loved and that they're going to count on to have a DK Metcalf kind of breakthrough, you know, a guy that we watched at Washington, Dante Pettis, that if you would have asked me and said, you know, how's he going to do in the league? I would have said, geesh, you know, his game should translate really well. You know, he understands the game, great body control. Maybe the speed or the physicality will be worth watching. And ultimately, you know, he's not gotten ahead of that curve and he's struggled there in San Francisco. But yeah, I think generally your point is exactly right, that position has the most to learn because you're facing savages every week at corner in this league. Whereas in college football, you're going to face a legit guy maybe two or three times the entire season.
Takeaways.
I feel some ownership in this one. I feel like all of our body talk, Salk, over the last 10 years of being on the air and talking about guys and you know, their power source, their calves, mm-hmm. Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs, Jordan Brooks, DK, man, none of those guys miss leg day. And I don't know if you heard Coach Carroll talking about the rookie linebacker, but man, he kind of went into some detail.
He really looks the part. He's got a great body. He's built differently than we've seen guys with really big, you know, legs and hips and butt, and really low center of gravity. Really powerful guy, and he's very quick and explosive.
Was that pause in there because he just didn't want to say butt?
Yes,
it's kind of what it sounded like. He sounded like Pete wanted to say he's got a really big butt, but he didn't want to. So he was like, he's got a really big legs and hips and power source and butt.
Yeah.
Like, let me put three other things in here to mask it.
Wouldn't it have been great if he would have said he's got a really big butt and I cannot lie? And I mean, if you...
I don't think it would have been, no.
You don't think that would have been great?
No, not really. Nope, that's not something I want to hear from Pete Carroll.
Oh, well, the short shorts are back. I mean, Salk, you saw it in a boys' basketball game last year, right? I mean, you saw the short shorts. They're... They made kind of a comeback, and John Stockton and crew are very proud of it. But when you've got legs like Jamal and Quandre and Jordan and DK and those guys have, it is just, he's just different. And Jordan Brooks does. And part of it's wearing Michael Kendricks 56, but he looks like a faster Michael Kendricks. Like before some of the injuries and the wear and tear on Kendricks and everything else, that dude was a baller. He was a Pro Bowler. He's an excellent player.
He was fast.
He was fast. Really fast. And this guy is very fast. And, you know, they have that little, you'll see those little, the cage, right, that you see out at training camp. And maybe the eight-man sled is gone, but most of them still have. And I know the Seahawks have a couple of them that their O-line works on it and their linebackers work on it. And it's just, you have to play underneath it or you're going to hit your head on it and knock yourself out. So it just teaches you to play with really low pad level. And you can see those guys that just struggle to do that, that are just hip benders, and it just is uncomfortable. And then you see guys like Jordan Brooks with his legs, like he could play the whole game in a catcher squat position and he would be just fine. And on top of it, he's really fast. So that's been an encouraging sign here out the gate.
Takeaways.
Well, I got two more here for you, Salky. Mm-hmm. You have mentioned Brandon Schell a few different times.
Big boy.
Pete mentioned him the other day. And I don't know if it's just you're no longer watching Jermaine Ifedi play right tackle, and this is not a horrible shot on Jermaine, who just struggled athletically, was a big guy, but he just was just lumbering all the time, even walking or jogging out. He just was not comfortable. Brandon Schell is a very athletic, large human. And let's hope that a guy that started 40 games and may not have been an ideal fit in a scheme that was more passive and pass first, let's hope he's exactly what the doctor ordered for this offensive line on the other side of Dwayne Brown to be the physical athletic presence that Russell really has not had at that right tackle position in a long time.
Yeah, might be my favorite acquisition because he looks so much the part. He's big kid, got good body control. I mean, there hasn't been a thing about him that hasn't looked good. And his consistency and his technique, really, really, you know, joy to see. I think he's going to be really good.
And let's hope he is. And he's going to more than likely play next to a rookie as far as just to take away the first week. And, you know, I said to you, boy, I don't know if any rookie is going to make much of an impact. Maybe Jordan Brooks. Daryl Taylor is obviously, you know, around. And that's going to be a tough situation.
Stacey,
I think, over
the Jake got mad at me about that the other day, by the way.
Really?
Oh, they kind of brought the thunder.
Whoa.
They were like, oh, what do you think of Daryl Taylor getting, you know, going to miss some time? How is that going to affect the season? It's not. Like, what are you talking about? Is there second? It's like, eh, he's a rookie. I'm not expecting much out of him next year. I mean, like, I want him to be good next year. That's when it's going to matter. But I don't expect much out of rookies. And they were furious. Like, well, rookies can contribute. Look what DK Metcalf did. And this time I'm like, well, sure they can. Of course, no one's saying they can't contribute. But counting on them to contribute, I think that's a mistake.
Are you counting on Damian Lewis starting at right guard?
Nope. Well, now you kind of have to.
I'm not. You got Phil Haynes and you got Jordan Simmons and you got like 100 guys. If it happens, great. I hope he does. I hope he beats all of them out and that he's the winner and that he contributes right away. That'd be awesome. But am I going to go into a season with that written in pen? No.
No.
He's a rookie. He might completely whiff. Who the heck knows? And so, I want Phil Haynes and his big old back. And I want all those guys to be ready to go just in case, because I don't know if Damian Lewis is going to be good. He's a rookie.
Yeah. Well, I know he's got a viable tackle next to him that is more athletic than Ifedi. And I know that those two already, like before you even play one single snap, are going to be much more athletic than Fluker and Ifedi were. Now, can they hold the point of attack? Can they move people? Can they be as physical? Can they be as consistent? I think very much a question, but let's just say I think the people in that building pretty excited about the upside of those two, and you heard it from Pete. Okay, last thing here.
Takeaways.
Let's hope for Russell's sake and for all of our sake that the Hawks are going to hit on some veteran free agents in ways they haven't here over the last few years. The Greg Olsen, Carlos Hyde have made a very strong early impression on those around them. They're healthy. They're both very fit. And I think unlike Luke Jokel or Eddie Lacy or Jerron Brown or Wet Towel or Jamarcus Webb or Sheldon Richardson, and we can go on.
Keep this list going.
Yep, over the last half dozen years.
That's a really awful
list. I think these are two that have come in right away. And I mean, we watched Eddie Lacy in OTAs and we're like, uh-oh.
Well,
Wet Towel. We watched Jamarcus Webb. We've watched Luke Jokel. We've watched a bunch of these guys, Jerron Brown. I'm like, And these two you can watch in the first week, and I've watched some of it just in their stream and certainly listened to people there, and they have made an impression that the guru has talked about Greg Olson all summer long, that this guy is just different, man. He is, and if he can stay upright and healthy and they will protect him, and Carlos Hyde looks so much better than some of those veteran guys that we have seen at that position, and that let's hope that those two in particular can make their mark. Are they going to be the superstars that Russell wanted? No. But can they be just key veteran, very good players that Super Bowl teams have? You have those veteran guys that they were right on, that they made them move on, that they stayed healthy over the course of the year and were tremendous players for them. And let's hope the early impression continues over the course of the season.
I'm racking my brain trying to come up with the name of the tackle that you were talking about earlier. Who
I can picture him.
Moved over to
Gary Gilliam.
There you go.
Gary,
good job, Howdy.
Yeah, he wasn't comfortable over there. Yep. He's the guy who caught the pass from John Ryan, right?
Yes, he was.
And that's sort of like his only big moment.
He was a Penn State tight end that kind of grew into a tackle a little bit and did a decent job. I mean, did a decent job at right tackle. And then they tried to put him in left tackle. And he was like, literally said, no, I'm not.
Yeah, I'm not going to. No, thanks. We're all good here. Thanks.
Yep. Just not going to go down that route.
Do you remember Odey Obuchi?
Oh, yeah.
Odey Obuchi. There's a lot of. They've invested in the position. Again, they've invested in it. It just hasn't worked. Remember when they brought in the guy from New Orleans? They cut him, then he went back and was really good?
Yeah, Evans.
Jari Evans.
Yeah, that was really annoying.
Yeah, they brought him in.
Sweaty legs.
Yeah, he's a pro bowler last year. He's super old. He's got rough knees.
That didn't work.
Yeah, we're going to cut him in training camp. But then he signed a contract right back with them and played almost at a pro bowl level the entire season. We had to watch some stiff
Mark
playing
Lewinsky
in the
or something.
That's right.
Yeah, who's now good or something. Yeah. Anyway. All right, those are Brock's takeaways. I had some takeaways from my camping trip, Brock. I didn't get to watch as much practice. I was off camping. Anytime the Salks go camping, you know that something strange has happened.
And it wasn't glamping, by the way. Molly wants to glamp.
What's the difference? Does glamping require a solid structure?
Glamping is going to have electricity.
Okay, but there was not electricity.
Army tent with a wood stove in there.
All right, that's not it. So it's not
glamping. No, hold on. Glamping, you can Google it. Glamping is they set everything up for you.
Oh, yeah, we didn't do that.
Yeah.
No, so this was not glamping. This is car camping. Let's be clear. I'm not hiking out into the woods and carrying my stuff on my back.
But you weren't sleeping in your car.
No, we slept in the tent, which
you inflated the tent?
Well, that's
saw?
What my dad asked.
What
so
happened?
I sent my dad a picture of the tent that we had put up. It's an 8-man tent. It's a great tent. 8-man tent.
It's got a big D
on it.
It
looks like a real 8-man tent.
Yeah.
Usually 8-man tents, like, it's sleep four. Yeah.
Well, it sleeps four.
Like, I would think that's listed as a 12-man tent. That's
well, you it tent. Sleeps, it put you put two queen air mattresses in it. One for us and one for the kids.
Oh, so you did inflate those.
Those were inflated. Oh. Absolutely. I have a little pump for it. And we inflate the air mattresses. Yes, Heather and I do have a pillow top air mattress that we sleep on.
Perfect.
Because why not?
Why not?
Okay.
Wake up crank.
So I send my dad a picture of the tent that we had set up. And later he's like, oh, so how was the camping? Oh, it was great. He's like, where do you sleep? In that little tent thing? And I was like, well, yeah, it's not that little. It's a pretty big tent. He goes, oh, right. How do you inflate that?
With a rip cord? It's like any parachute.
I think my dad thinks that we were sleeping inside a bouncy house. Like, no, Dad, you don't inflate it. You just use. He's like, oh, do you use those? Oh. You just use those curved poles.
Yeah.
Well, they don't start off curved; they're just bendy.
I steamed some wood until it was pliable, and then we bent.
It's a structure. I wanted to ask him, like, well, who inflated your house? Like, there's no inflating. It's just a tent. You set it up.
You get a deviated septum just for being with the constant wind flow of being inside an inflated tent.
Quite frankly, the biggest pain of the whole tent is at the end when you're trying to get the air out to stuff it back into the bag. It takes forever. Yep. So anyway, we were in the tent, and we had a good time. We stayed at Grayland Beach State Park, which I would recommend as long as the weather is 80 degrees like it was this weekend. You walk 5 minutes to the beach from our campsite, and then only 20 more minutes to get to the water. Widest beach I've ever seen. It's crazy.
Wow.
Wendell, not a fan necessarily of any of it. He ran on the beach a little bit, and then Wendell, in his old age, he's 11 years old, 11 and a half. He's getting up there. And when he sees other dogs having fun, it like bugs him out. And it's not like he wants to go play with them because he's terrible with other dogs. He just barks at them and he's obnoxious. But he sees them like off leash, like run after a frisbee. And he starts making this sound that I can try and imitate it, but I don't know that I'll do it justice because it's so horrible. But he'll just sit there and go like,
He's like,
and really loudly.
It's like any old man. I say, hey, what are you doing out there? What are you playing around in those streets?
Terrible.
Is it a different sound? It's a different sound than when he steps on his, you know.
Yeah, it is. Totally different. That's unique. He's done that enough. We know what it is.
Yes.
Wow. So he didn't love it. But the kids had a great time. And for the second time camping, we made walking tacos. Now, if you don't know what walking tacos are, you really should. They're fantastic. The idea is you get all the fixings for tacos. It's perfect for camping because you kind of make a lot of that ahead or just carry it in a cooler. And then you, rather than eating it with a tortilla or something, you open like a Frito-Lay plant pack with a variety pack, open an individual bag of Cheetos, Doritos, whatever it may be, dump in everything, crush it up a little bit, mix it all around, and then you eat it out of the bag. They're great. My friend Tom Duhamel's sister, Jen, and her husband Marty were the first people that introduced us to
them. Thank you, Marty.
It's a staple for us, too.
It's 2 weeks in a row Tom comes up in the podcast because he's the one whose ex-girlfriend was at the Arkansas LSU wedding. So Tom's been a big part of
this. So you put diced tomatoes and lettuce?
You can. We didn't do all that. I think we had ground beef that we had cooked at home. We had sour cream, guacamole, salsa.
Cheese.
Grated at home.
Yep.
And then, I think Avery had beans because kids like beans. So, yeah. Yeah, you could certainly do shredded lettuce or chopped up tomato. I mean, you could put whatever.
I do a can of Nally chili.
There you go. Just, yeah, whatever it is you like.
And then how do you do the family size from Costco, right? The bag of chips?
Well, I mean, come on. We got to be reasonable here.
Frito scoops.
Yes.
Well, family
so,
size.
So here's my question. I have come up with my official ranking of the six standard Frito-Lay chips
in the variety
bag. They come in the variety pack. And I think this ranking will surprise you a little bit because it surprised me actually after trying them all.
And this is for the walking tacos. This is not just in general.
Bob, go to a walking tacos concert?
No, that's walking papers.
Oh,
different. That's
who
a band.
Who turned you on to this? Oh.
In a huge surprise upset, the best chip for walking tacos is Cheetos.
Ooh,
and you wouldn't think that because taste so strongly, et cetera. I know it doesn't sound right.
Nope.
But when you mix them up a little bit, you crush them, not all the way to dust, but just enough so that they're not long, and then dump everything else in. A lot of the taste of the Cheeto goes away, and all you get is just that incredibly satisfying crunch.
Corn puff. Mm.
Yes.
Texture.
Your texture. The taste kind of disappears with everything else that's so strong, and you just get texture. You'd think it would be too strong, but it's not. So that's number one. Number two is Fritos. Probably not a surprise. Fritos are sort of made for this.
So good.
Number three, and I was surprised that this fell this far, is just the regular nacho Doritos, which are very good, and they're sort of the standard. But as it turns out, Fritos and Cheetos actually end up being a little bit better.
Hmm.
Now, number four. Now, maybe you would think Cool Ranch would be next. You're wrong. Number four is Ruffles.
I love it.
Again, really? Satisfying crunch.
I love it.
The taste is just enough. There's a lot of salt in the Ruffles.
Not a lot of complexity to the...
But they hold together pretty well in the crunching. They don't just grind into dust. So Ruffles are four. Number five is Cool Ranch Doritos. Now, these would be number one if you were under the age of seven. The problem is once you get older, the one taste you lose first is that for Cool Ranch Doritos. They are for kids and kids only. Don't fool yourself into thinking you can still eat Cool Ranch Doritos as an adult.
Now, I thought you were going to go, don't waste your time putting extra toppings on an already perfect chip.
No,
like, why would we waste Cool Ranch Doritos by filling the bag with sour cream?
And then finally, last are the plain old Lay's. They just fall apart in the clutch.
You have to eat those so fast.
Oh, they're
it's the hardest. The last time I had these, a couple weeks ago when we were camping, I had the Lay's because I was like, I want everyone else to be able to have the ones that are really good. I want them to have a good experience having this for the first time. And had the Lay's and... You know, you got
to
eat it fast because it just soaks everything up and it gets mushy.
They're too mushy for the walking tacos. I would recommend against the Lay's or the Cool Ranch, but Cheetos, giant upset. I was amazed at how good that was. So there you go. Those are the official Mike Salk walking taco chip rankings.
Okay, so I got an official poll question for Kyle and Howdy.
Oh.
A dozen years ago when Mike Salk moved to town as the elitist from Silver Spoon, everything else that Pete said about him.
That's enough.
If we would have said 12 years later, Salk would be so passionate about camping and would camp and would have walking tacos and have his own structure. And it would have camped all over Washington from, you know, the Western Alps to the beach now and everywhere in between.
Friday night, just or Thursday night, refreshing the Washington campsite for waiting for a one to pop open so that we could go.
Yep. Yeah. Or Salk became the golf aficionado that he has become. And just the lover of golf, and has basically his own swing coach because he loves the game so much. Which of those would have been a bigger shock 12 years ago?
I think I would have said the camping part because it was such a complete departure from of him.
Do you not remember?
Pretentious elitist alert.
Do you not remember when Heather and I went to Cape Disappointment?
Yes.
Our first few months here, stayed in a yurt.
Yes.
We did go yurting.
We did stay in a yurt. Now, to be fair, it was a little rainy, so we went in town and got fondue for dinner.
Yes.
And we brought the apricot cheese. We made fun of us. But we did go yurting just a few months into moving here.
True.
This is natural progression.
Kyle?
The bigger upset would have absolutely been camping. Yeah. Because, I mean, golf is right up Mike's alley. Not just is it sports, it is dressing up. It is people acting like fancy and classy.
There's clubs
right
involved.
Yeah, there is exclusivity.
You have to be a member of the club to be
Mike
there.
Mike loves that sort of thing. Camping is the exact opposite and really not up his alley.
All right. Well, then let me bring this back around to modern day sports for one moment here. And then I know Brock wants to tell his melatonin dream Jim Mora story.
Oh, no.
So hold on. Since you're talking about clubs and elitism and secret handshakes and all that, mm-hmm. I just want to quickly address the Fernando Tatis Jr. situation because I've seen everyone in the world writing in
Scumbag.
And chiming in on this. People are very upset on both sides of this. So just to set the story in case you haven't heard it, budding young superstar Fernando Tatis Jr. for the Padres, team is up 10-3 in the eighth, bases loaded, 3-0 count. He crushes a grand slam. After the game, there's a little bit of noise. The opposing manager, Chris Woodward, who used to be here, really well-respected guy, says, and I'll paraphrase just to keep it quick, basically says, well, yeah, that's not how we grew up playing the game. He didn't crush him for it. He didn't necessarily call him out. He didn't say we're going to throw at him or anything. But he's like, yeah, that's not really how we grew up playing the game, but the game has changed a little bit. Then his own manager kind of said, yeah, he missed a 3-0 take sign. He probably... You know, that's probably not how we want to be doing it. Now, nobody ripped him, but, you know, for baseball, that's like, you might
have. Pretty strong.
That's pretty strong wording, right? And now all of the baseball, this is ridiculous, and the unwritten rules are stupid, and you keep crushing home runs, don't apologize to anybody, and anybody. I got to tell you, I don't necessarily think this is the worst offense of all time. 7 runs is not the biggest lead. If he had done it on a 3-1 count, by the way, nobody says a word. Nobody has a problem with him hitting a home run up 7 mm-hmm. runs. Nobody. No one in baseball, not one person. The issue is swinging 3-0 in that situation, and are you rubbing it in a little bit? Do I think this is the worst offense of the unwritten rules? No. Stealing a bag up 7 in that spot,
yes.
I think is legit, like, let's go to war.
Yes.
I think that is classless. That's my opinion. This is kind of in between. It's not terrible. It's not great. And they treated it as such. Nobody killed him for it. They treated it like, yeah, that's not like exactly what we want to do. I'm sorry that everybody wants baseball to be modernized. I know that you want them to be more fun in the game. And I do, too. I like fun in baseball. I loved the World Baseball Classic. I loved watching the passion and seeing the guys jump around. I don't mind seeing celebrating in baseball. But I also don't mind when it doesn't happen. Not every sport has to be the same.
Yep.
I love when the Seahawks have a coordinated dance to bye, bye, bye. And again, I think that's great. I don't need my baseball team to do that. It's fine when a basketball player parades around after a dunk. That's fine. I enjoy it. I don't think negatively about that player or the sport because of it. It's great. That's that sport. I don't need baseball to mimic it. It is okay for baseball to have this sort of gentlemanly, unwritten rules where, yeah, you don't do that when you're up 7 or 8 runs late in a game. It's just not necessary. And it's okay if you do it in another game. That's fine. The
yep.
sports can be different.
Yep.
And trying to compare them all the time, I think, is such a waste of time and energy.
I agree. Howdy?
I think that this is the wrong example to be pointing out to say the game needs to change. Because I agree that there can be some very specific things. Now, like you said, this is not a common thing that everyone knows in baseball. For most fans, like, they're just coming to realize, like, oh, wait, that's a thing that people think. I guess I can understand why you think that. This is not stealing a bag when you're up with a huge lead. It's not that. So,
and it used to be bunting when you were up with a huge lead. Yep. I mean, like, and nobody bunts anymore in general, so you don't see that. But you're up 7-8 runs in the eighth inning and you're laying down a bunt to move the runner. That's obnoxious.
So there's still some unwritten rules.
You're taking the extra base. Like, that stuff's obnoxious in there.
There's some unwritten rules that should never change.
I think so. That's my opinion. I know that there are plenty of people out there who think that these things are ridiculous. And if you don't like it, just don't get in that spot. Like, okay, but I was in the spot that day. And baseball's not played just one game. It's played over generally 162. It's played over a large time. And some nights you don't have it. That's okay.
And what would Jared Kelenic do?
Well, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I don't mind him swinging away either. Like, that's okay. I'm not mad at the kid for swinging away 3-0. I don't think he's a bad kid for it.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great kid.
Yeah,
he's
just exactly some of the unwritten history.
Wants.
Yep.
But I don't mind him learning some of that along the way either and later saying, yeah, that's all right. Probably the next time I wouldn't take a swing in that spot because I'm already up 7 runs to 3-0 count. Swing 3-1. Take a
kind of like you in a dozen years, you've become quite the camper and golfer, and we all change and we all develop, just as Rocky said. And in Moscow when he beat Drago, you know, you can change and I can change and
it's
we can all
just
change.
Just like Rocky said, yes. That's it.
I think baseball in the next dozen years is going to change significantly.
It will.
Lots of the old guard is out. I mean, you don't have veteran. How many veteran players said something to Fernando Tatis in the clubhouse?
Maybe none. But to be fair, both of the managers who commented on this were younger managers. This is not.
They
know,
were,
Dusty
but they played.
Baker and Bruce
Bochy. No. But they played a couple decades ago, and they played in the
Chris
year.
Woodward played like 5 years ago.
No, he did not.
For the Mariners,
he played for the Mariners this within decade. The last 6 years.
Are you serious?
Yes,
yeah. In the 2010s.
Yes, he is not that old.
I know he coached with the Mariners.
Oh yeah,
but
I bet you Chris Woodward is.
There's no way he played in the 2010s.
I bet you Chris Woodward's younger than you, Brock.
Are you? Yeah, he might be.
I bet you Chris Woodward is younger. I bet he's my age.
But to my point, he still played with guys that had played in the previous era, who had played with guys from the previous era, where there were, you
know,
those
unwritten rules. Chris Woodward's age who are still playing, though.
Passed down.
This is not the oldest guard who's talking about this. These are guys who still play the game and are still right there in the middle of it. I don't know. I don't know.
A dozen years from now.
Yeah,
I think a dozen years from now, many of these unwritten rules are going to be long gone rules.
Well, and maybe that'll be because of the footballization of baseball, which we've talked about often, and which I just think is a bummer. It's okay for things to be different and to have different mentalities and different structure. I'm okay with those things.
Yep.
Fighting's okay. Fighting's okay in hockey. It's not okay in other sports. That's okay.
Yep.
Sports can be different. And we can celebrate some of those differences without demanding that everything be exactly the same. All right,
tell
me
later.
Thank you, Jared. Tell me about your dream.
I feel like I don't have enough time.
Really? You want to hang on to this one?
I feel like people need to sit on this for a week.
Okay.
And I'll share my melatonin and M&M dream that I had where I attacked Jim Mora next week.
People will be tuned in and ready, I'm sure.
Sure will.
Over the course of the week. Maybe we'll do a special bonus podcast just for you to tell the story.
Perfect.
We'll have to see. All right. Hey, good stuff. I think Jake will join us next week. We'll go a little in-depth on training camp and I don't know. God knows what else. Until then, Brock, the hay.
Be it in the barn.
See you, everybody.
Get to the chopper!